This is the Fantastic Books Podcast,
the fantasy and sci-fi book review podcast for fantasy fanatics, book nerds, and lovers of lore and stories.
Covering some of the most loved fantasy series as well as brand new novels.
With your hosts, Anna
and Sam. Let's see what we're reading this week. Welcome back, fantastic listeners. This is Sam.
And Anna.
And this week, we're joined by author Tom Waters, author of the book Blood of the First Men. Tom, it's great to have you on here. Welcome to our show.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me and for making the space to allow me to speak to you. It's very nice.
Oh, definitely. We're very excited to talk about your book. We got a chance to read the description of your story, and it just sounds so unique and fascinating, and I can't wait to dive into all the little details just from the excerpt that we took a look at.
Yeah. Do you want to explain to the listeners like what your story is about? Like give a little blurb of it?
Yeah. So it's about Eldi, which is a half Lothian boy. Lothian is one of the races that is that I invented for my world. And he's basically on this quest to go find his mother after some things happen that I wouldn't be spoiling yet, of course. It's very much a story about morality, almost, as this this boy in the beginning starts grappling with this power he has and with this magic he holds and what the consequences are for the world around him. Yeah, I like it when stories like don't downplay how powerful magic is in these worlds.
Oh, cool.
And I think that's something I wanted to focus on. Magic is so immensely powerful. What do you do with a character that is this powerful? How do you get them in the world? How do you work the world around them?
That's awesome. I really like that idea. And I think there was a little bit in the excerpt about how he sort of loses his way as a character a little bit as well. So I'm interested to talk about that. But for your world, it sounds like magic is going to be a huge part of it. And I think from the blurb, it sounds like you've combined some magic and some science together.
Yeah. Ever since like as a kid, I watched a lot of YouTube and especially a lot of space stuff. Like, and so
you
physics came into play, and physics came into place like very quickly when you watch those kind of videos, of course. And that's where I took my inspiration from like these, our real world actually works. And I just added another force, like gravity and, motion and all that stuff. I just simply took essence, as I call it. And I said, the user can do anything like the other forces can. So you can say, now I want to use gravity, now I want to use thermodynamics, this kind of sciencey stuff, I suppose. It can't do the impossible. I really wanted to have it be a magic that is possible, so to speak.
That's awesome. I really appreciate that kind of concept. From doing this podcast, we've encountered so many different stories with different types of magic systems, and I've really grown to appreciate the complexity of more of a hard balanced magic system or science-based magic system where there are specific rules and conditions that allow people to perform different tasks or like products.
Yep.
And it allows us as a reader to wrap our mind around it. I think sometimes, you know, as a general example where you encounter more things like a soft magic system like Harry Potter, where it's like, you can do anything as long as you know the words. It's a little bit of kind of a cop-out where magic, to make a compelling story, in my opinion, should have certain limitations and also allow a character to have to triumph over something. So yeah. I'm really interested to see how your magic system plays out in your story. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah. Are all of the characters in your world able to use magic, or is it limited to certain? I know you mentioned some races. Is it limited to certain groups of people?
No. I was trying to make, in my world at least, like very equal almost, that is everyone can do anything they set their mind to. But the problem is with this kind of magic in the world, you have to understand both the science of it and the philosophy of it. Because the soul in my universe is like a thing, as in like it's scientifically actually provable that you have a soul. And so this is kind of the more philosophy kind of side of it, where they can... Yeah, because the main character is like very into soul magic. So I focused on this sort of pathway for him where he has to think about the the philosophies of the soul. What does it entail? Like, it's people that we're talking about, of course, and the science of it, like, can't lose your way as in viewing people as a resource, because you could technically use people as a resource, which is, yeah.
I like that slippery slope.
Yeah, I love the consequence of that. And I know, again, just setting that little excerpt of your story, what the consequences would be for your main character to lose his way and how that'll impact the people around him in the world. So that's awesome. I love that. Because it's interesting to have a morally gray character, especially when you have access to power. Power has the ability to corrupt people. And, you know, it's nice to see stories with that altruistic, firm, good guy type of, like, protagonist.
I don't think it's as realistic, though, as someone who's a normal can fall prey to other powers or maybe lose their way a little bit.
Yeah, we're all flawed. We're all people. So I find that awesome to get a character that gets more and more powerful and then potentially lose their way if that power corrupts them.
The average mage, I'll say, is I call them the Essentum, which is derived for essence, which they use to cast their magic. The average pupil, I'd say, is like dangerous in the world. It's very not a lot of people do it and understand it, so they're rather feared. I don't want to say, because they're rather respected more than they are feared, because there are so few and very strict rules. For example, if a student uses this kind of magic outside of school, there's almost like a lifelong ban on it, and you can get into prison and all this stuff. So there's like real consequences for using magic if you're not licensed, once again, so to speak.
Oh, cool. It sounds like you put a lot of thought into like the culture of the world and the world building, especially around like the cultural rules and norms around magic. Could you like describe a little bit sort of the setting of your world and where you came up with the ideas of what you wanted your fantasy world to look like?
It's a big question.
I'm sure it's changed over different drafts and everything too.
Oh yeah, I think fill a whole hour with just talking about this question. Yeah, I have the map on my second monitor here, and I'm just looking at it and thinking what I could say. I think it started out as an idea I had with my not yet girlfriend at the time. We had like this class project where we had to make something. Basically, we did like IT, so we thought we were going to make an MMO style game, like as a concept for this class.
Cool.
And that's where we made like the first building blocks, I suppose, of the world. And afterwards I got into Dungeons and Dragons, and then I started utilizing this world to play in with my friends, and then it took a whole lot more shape, and then they ruined it by setting numerous cities on fire.
So Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah,
exactly. And then I took another timeline and I thought, you know, I'm gonna write a book about it. It's, I suppose, high medieval, not a lot of technology, like crossbows are around, but guns aren't. I think I'm more of a mystery and magic writer, I suppose, rather than political. So I don't have a lot of big, like, Game of Thrones style characters with dubious intent and all that kind of plotting. Mine is more about the secret of reality, of how people work, morality, all that stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. Do you read a lot of mystery as well?
I'm actually rather new to reading as a whole. I started a book club with my friends now. I managed to get them to read as well. We started with Red Rising, and we're now reading the second book of Patrick Rothfuss, Wise Man's Fear.
Those books.
Yeah, I absolutely love them as well, as far as I am right now. So I think those were, like, especially Name of the Wind was a big inspiration, especially with Quoth. His morality is like a bit shifty, I suppose, as well.
Yes. He's definitely a morally gray character.
Yes, yeah.
I think I made mine a little bit more bad, I suppose, in some ways. The first book is also, like, the cover is red to symbolize, like, he's a bit going places.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it gives your character opportunity to grow, maybe redeem himself, maybe double down and become worse. You never know. But that's really, I think that's cool. And it sounds like your world is full of adventure, and I appreciate that kind of investigation of self. I don't read a lot of mystery books. I've grown to appreciate them over time. But, you know, jumping back to the concept of like Game of Thrones, as a reader, sometimes I get bogged down trying to keep track of too many characters, like political intent and intrigue. That can be a little distracting sometimes. So I can agree, if I were to ever get into the world of writing, that wouldn't necessarily be my first type of choice for characters either. It's pretty cool.
I love mystery, so I think that sounds right up my alley. When you're creating your characters, are you, because lots of people have different methods to do this. Some people will base them on people they know. Sometimes authors will base their characters on other characters from fantasy. Is there a way that you kind of create like a personality when you're writing for your characters?
Not per se, like what did I think about? I just usually, because I'm so used as a dungeon master to just snap into a role and just improvise as I go, that I needed this character to exist. And I just thought like, yeah, what makes sense for them? How do I want them to interact with this boy who's turning a little bit off the road? And so I wanted, like, for example, his mentor to be really something he could grapple onto. But this mentor struggles with it himself, so he lashes out sometimes as well. So I wanted to make sense with those characteristics. How would he react in his day-to-day life? I think the characters, that's what I'm a little afraid of almost, that the characters, except for my main guy, are like a bit flat almost. I've been told by readers that have already read it that it's not the case, but it's something that nags me a little bit, that I'm a little afraid of, that they're a bit flat. I hope to get some feedback on that when it's out, so I can improve for the next ones. But that's, I think, the one thing that I really want to sort out as a new writer.
Do you think that writing characters is the toughest part of writing? And if so, like, do you have a favorite part of writing as well?
Oh, the favorite part is definitely just the first draft, just writing. I love like the train almost. My girlfriend hated it because for 3 months I talked about nothing else than the book. So it was getting to a point where she was like, yeah, I know already. It's okay. Great.
Yeah, just, I mean, when she supported me a lot, of course. Creativity groove and you just keep going, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's all consuming.
I mean, you know, you get super excited. Anna's
writing. I'm trying to write a book, but yeah, I understand exactly when, like, you get fixated. It's so hard to think about anything else. And you're like, I just have to get it on the page. I just have to write it down.
Yeah, I recently graduated as well. I had all the time in the world. So it was summer vacation, I think. Those were 2 months. And then for 2 months after that, I just did the first draft in 4 months.
Wow, that's fast.
Yeah, I just... whole day, basically. I looked at it as a 9-to-5 almost. And then I slept and then I went back to it. Yeah.
That must have felt so cathartic, though. And like such a nice feeling to be that, have that much inspiration and just be able to go for it and keep going.
Especially now since I've started a job now and I'm writing the second one. I have to actively try to not do it during the hours.
Yeah.
And especially now in the weekends, like this morning, I finished chapter 6 of the second book. So
cruising along.
Yeah.
I'm making really a lot of progress. How big do you want your series to be?
I think my predictions right now, I think, is like 6 books for this series, maybe 7, depending on how big I can make the last book.
Is it all going to follow one character?
No. The little snippet in the summary, you guys, there was like a part about the canvas in the tower. It's 3 canvases that are in this tower. And this is just, Eldi is the first canvas to be explored. And then there's 2 other ones. And they'll all, that's why, I mean, the final book will be pretty big because they'll all need to connect in the last one or the before last one.
That's a lot to keep track of to make them come all together like that. That's impressive. Are you someone who keeps notes while you're writing, or how do you keep track of all your characters and all your plot points, or do you just have it all in your mind?
Both, I think. I have like a script, and I have a friend who understands it very well, and he catches me on like plot holes in the first one.
Oh, that was nice. Amazing. That was a
really good help. Yeah. And he like oversaw my script for the second one, and he was like, no, not this part. Doesn't make sense.
It's nice to have people kind of fact check you and keep you on the course.
Yeah, he's amazing at it. I don't know how he does it. If I can't even keep track of it, I don't know how he does it. Yeah, I try to plan it out, but it's more of bullet points and like one page. I made for the first book, I made one page with just like 20 bullet points on it. So I just knew the red lining, I suppose. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. There's all different ways to write, because we've talked to some other authors who, you know, don't plan anything and they don't know where their story is going. And we talked to some authors who have like 30 pages of meticulous notes. So it's always interesting to see where people land and how they plan. Mm-hmm. And I think it's awesome because there's no correct way to do it. Like everyone has their own method that seems to work best for them.
What I plan the most, I suppose, is the world rather than the story. So I have a very big Google Drive with just the lore that my players also just add as homework. And that's where I sometimes have to like reconnect with it, I suppose, and be like, yeah, how was this again? Like this town, what was their deal? So that's more planned out. But the story itself of how the characters move towards it and through it is more, yeah, bullet points.
Do you think because you have such a big world, you could do different series set within it? Like, once this first series is done, you could do something completely different?
Yeah, I think so. I already have that friend I talked about. It's called mm-hmm. Lucas. He already proposed, like, you have to make a story about this character.
That's so awesome. It sounds like a very supportive friend.
More work for you to do, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Because so there's a great quote I heard somewhere where they were talking about the setting of like fantasy in the world and how it essentially its role is to be a character unto itself. And I think that is very important, because when you have a immersive world that governs its characters, then you can really drive a plot forward. Where if your world's kind of just open and uninspired, it's hard to really dive a story around it.
It seems like, too, I think fantasy is so important because, you know, it's not in our world. So you have to spend so much time. It sounds like you did, you know, developing places and lore and different races. Like, that's a lot of work. And, you know, it's not completely unintentional. And I think you probably know that because you play D&D a lot. And, you know, you have to make all these pieces fit together. So it sounds like you've built such a really fascinating and really expansive world, which is awesome, because then you can keep using it for so many things.
Yeah,
I love that idea, though, of like implementing the world as a campaign for D&D and getting to play around with it and seeing how characters would operate in it.
Yeah,
like it's a great way to almost do like a first draft.
I feel like that's how you could learn your world.
Yeah, because some like as a tribute, a lot of the characters in the like side characters are named after the players I've had over the years.
I love that.
That's fun.
So, for example, there's this good friend of mine played a archer called Hassan. And, well, he's in there and he's shooting his bow. It's just like a little nod to them.
Yeah.
I'm thankful that they played. So I want to implement them into this world. As far as like extra stories, this first book, I'm now looking at the map again. Used like one sliver of the map, and at the front of the book I placed a picture of the map. It's only a part of the map. I intentionally left out the sides so I can really explore that at my own pace.
That's awesome. What other kind of fantasy stuff besides D&D do you like or inspired your book? Like, I know we talked about Name of the Wind a little bit.
I don't think you can classify Red Rising as fantasy, but it has some, you know,
I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of, I feel like people would call it fantasy. Yeah.
But I really loved those. I read the first three books, and then now we do Name of the Wind, and then later we're gonna do the newer ones. But that was amazing, I thought. Like Darrow, for example, I really liked the action scenes in that book. What else? Star Wars, of course. Yeah. I love Star Wars.
Who doesn't? Yeah.
It's just Narnia, timeless. It's great.
And I have like the golden lion sword. You can see that this is the Game of Thrones one, and the lion sword of Narnia.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, those
I have like a whole bunch of lightsabers in my closet. So
yeah, you can see the Obi-Wan one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
As far, I think I'm a little bit of a noob when it comes to like book fantasy. We're going at it with our little group of book readers. I know someone proposed Mistborn to be read next. So I'm looking forward to getting into Brandon Sanderson's work.
We just got into that. We're kind of somehow new to his stuff. I just read him for the first time last year, but I thought it was really good. Mistborn was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I think it was like, yeah, last year was the first time we got into his writing, and I've like devoured 7 of his books now just because they've been so much fun.
Yeah.
Concept called the Sanderlanch, where towards the end of his stories, like all this action and lore just comes to like a point and you can't put it down. So I think in that regard, his stories are very readable and they just are very satisfying.
Yeah, the ends are perfect. You can't stop at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to try and implement that on myself as well, like the connection. So
yeah,
I should push for Mistborn and what was it? Stormlight Archives, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those are big. We still haven't. Yeah. I just bought that one. It's
Way of Kings.
It's
yeah.
A hefty it's book. Massive. I think it's 1,200 pages. It's a big book.
Yeah. A Sunday beach read.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Every Sunday.
One of my friends like devours books. It's insane. He's in this club now we have, and he's by far just reading through everything so fast. I think I'm at 160 with Wise Man's Fear. We started at the same time and he's already at like 300-ish.
Wow. So oof. I like to take my time reading because I, especially like in the essence for those books, like Patrick Rothfuss's writing is very beautiful. So I like to take the time and like really piece it apart.
He leaves a lot of clues, or he'll do like a callback to something that happened so many chapters ago. So I think it's better to like take your time and find all the pieces of the mystery he's put in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I'm addicted to those kinds of stories where it suddenly just clicks.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like almost a nice reward for paying attention.
Yeah, I think it's almost better on the second read because now you have everything. You know, you've read it all once and then you can find even more every time you reread it after that.
I got inspired by the Dark Souls world building. I don't know if you're...
Like, yeah, those are great games.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like the world around it is like so... When you play the game, you don't get it.
Yeah.
You have to actually go and find out yourself. And I was addicted to watching those videos. It's so amazing.
Yeah, the lore on it is fascinating.
I tried to kind of implement not that kind, because you have to, of course, when you read the book, you have to understand. But inspired by the like puzzle pieces.
And
I recognize it as well in this book I'm reading right now with from Patrick. Yeah, I love that kind of storytelling.
I agree. I think that's one of my favorite components of stories and reading in general is I love the complexity and subtlety sometimes of if you read a story and you get to the conclusion, you're like, that was great. And then you reread it and knowing more, you go back and you're like, oh my God, I missed this and that. Mm-hmm. And there was a clue there. Like it's such a rewarding experience. And I think that's what makes stories just so enjoyable.
I'm just impressed by how authors can do that because it's so many pieces to keep track of. And I would assume they would have to write the story and then add all those details back on a later draft. But I don't know. Everyone's different.
I did it at one point. That's
How did that go?
I was at the very end of my story and I did something and I was like, I'm not proud of just doing this like out of the blue. So I went back to the beginning. And I wrote like a chapter extra, just foreshadowing it.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm. How many drafts did you have to go through to get your book to be complete?
I think I finished the first draft and I already started sending it out to people like publishers, and then it changed over time even more. So I think it's just one draft because I just kept changing that one draft. Yeah. But I had a wonderful other friend who helped me. He's an English teacher, because the language, of course, is the hardest part for me, like the revisioning yep. and making sure it's correct. And he helped me a ton. So I hope there's no like weird yeah. English things in there. Be sure to let me know if you read it, if you find something weird.
No, that could definitely be tough, but it helps to have someone who's a, you know, an English teacher would know the grammar and everything for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah, because our grammar is obnoxious.
English grammar is so hard.
If you have with Dutch, it's luckily like the same language family, I suppose. So it's, yeah, I got that going.
Did you write your book in English or in Dutch?
In English.
In English.
I really don't like how Dutch sounds when you move it to fantasy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's so... We have such weird words almost for things. Like when you go to like the Fey realm, for example. Yep. It's so powerful, the word Fey realm. And with us, it's like it's Feyenbos, I suppose. Or like, I'm thinking of the word, but it's not coming to me in my own language. That's a...
Yeah, clearly much more powerful in English then.
Yeah, or like a gnome, for example. Gnome is kabouter, which is, it doesn't sound right. And also there's like a series like for children here, which is called kabouter. And then it's also like, it's a very childish almost feel to it in our language.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So I moved away from it. And also my English is way better than my Dutch is. Yeah, all my degrees are with English schools and English subjects. So I was fully, yeah. And my D&D was also fully English because we have someone from Germany joining and I don't speak German. So
just made it more accessible.
Yeah. Of course, I wanted to reach, because I don't think fantasy is very big in my home country. Like mm-hmm. it gets read, but not a lot of people I know actually get into it. When you go worldwide, of course, yeah, it's way bigger. So I wanted to get it to as many people, really. Make it as accessible as possible.
That's awesome. I think fantasy is definitely getting more popular for adults, too. Like, I think Sam mentioned Harry Potter earlier, and I think a lot of people think of that as, like, a kid's series and fantasy. Like, Narnia, too, like, that was always mm-hmm. geared towards children. And I think with the popularity in... like hard magics like yours, where it's like more science based and you have these characters that are more morally gray, that appeals to adults a lot more. And I think our generation too is just like, we play a lot more like board games and D&D and we like that kind of stuff, whereas I think my parents' generation not so much. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool to see how popular fantasy is becoming, and I'm really liking all the different ways it's going.
Yay, nerd culture.
Yay.
Our time is now.
I just want to get that out there. Don't give my book to any kids. It gets
noted.
Yeah,
not for kids. It
gets dark sometimes. So
the world can be a dark place sometimes. I'm
exactly.
Here for
they'll learn soon enough.
When you were writing your story, Tom, did you have a character that was like most difficult to write?
I try to not fall into like the trope, I suppose, you have with male fantasy authors as well, that when you write a female character that they're like all the same. I feel like some fantasy books that I've read now where the women in the books are like not as diverse as the men are. Because you write from a male perspective, of course, so I think it's a bit harder when you write female characters to make them as real as with men, because of course you know what being a man feels like, but I don't know what being a woman feels like. So I try to get my perspective from my sister, from my girlfriend, and be like, sometimes like, is this okay? But I think that was the hardest part. I try to also make them a little gender neutral almost. For example, the parents of my main character, like the father is the artist and the mother is like the legionnaire commander of the army. So I try to switch that up because I mean, I also showed it to people when I said, oh yeah, the parent is the commander. They also all said, oh, what's he like? And I was like, haha.
Gotcha.
Gotcha.
Surprise.
Yeah. So I think, but if I had to pin down one character, maybe the, and that's a spoiler if I describe her like this.
We'll let our readers discover then. No spoilers.
There's a classmate, and I had a tougher time with her because I wasn't a good student like her. So it was harder to write someone that actually
cared about their studies and
that's funny. Like, my main character did for his magic studies, but you know, the other ones I said he did well. So
yeah. History class, whatever. Math, forget it.
Yeah, he didn't even sign up for math. He just no.
Just skip it. You don't need it.
You needed four subjects at the least, so he picked carefully.
Smart move. Did you have a favorite character then on the other flip side of that question?
Yeah, definitely. His best friend. He's called Ragni. And I used to play him in a campaign before it fell apart. I suppose it stopped. I really missed the character. He used to be like a dragonborn, but now he's Charnin, which is another of my races. Well, actually, my girlfriend made that race, and I think they're very cool since they don't have eyes. They grow horns from their eye sockets, and they have like this kind of rhino skin. Almost, so they're like really adapted to the harsh environments which they live in, and they don't see the world, they kind of feel the world around them, so they see it more objectively. I said,
oh cool, what are your other races in your book?
I have a lot of them. Well, a lot is but the main ones I suppose is like those are the Loftians. They're all kind of connected to an element, but not like, for example, Loftians are air, but then the Dakin are disease. And
ooh.
So their blood has like magic in them, which is then also explained. And basically, when the character, I use it in fight scenes. It's so awesome to use in fight scenes. When he gets hurt, something that he bleeds on becomes almost weightless.
Oh, because
they're like attuned to air and stuff, which he uses to his advantage. Like, for example, I don't want to spoil the fight scene.
Yeah, so. Like any kind of weapon, projectile, yep. You know, I can see how that just comes to their advantage.
I'm seeing the like D&D creativity getting pulled in here because I feel like this is very out of the box thinking for like fight scenes and your magic. So I'm really excited about how that's all going to play off of each other, especially in fight scenes. Did you like writing fight scenes?
I feel like I wrote my scenes to be very efficient almost. They're very short. They're because yeah, this magic is when he gets into a fight, especially in the beginning where the stakes are like lower, I suppose.
Yeah.
Like he had no trouble with just a regular guy. Yeah. What is he gonna do? But then when he faces an actual threat later on, you see him really get like he gets hit like a truck.
I think that really showcases your character's power, though, where they can dispatch an average, normal opponent. Showcases how strong they are. And then when you have someone of like true substance and they struggle, how they overcome that, that's where fantasy really shows what you're made of, so to speak. So that's pretty cool.
I wanted to really show this like power imbalance almost in the world with this. And then, yeah, of course, he starts to think, oh, I'm God, I'm the best, I'm so good at this. And then he meets a master of the craft and, yeah.
Gets humbled real quick.
Exactly. So the fight scenes aren't big since there's such a power imbalance almost always. In every fight I've had in the first book, at least, there's such an imbalance just to show what the imbalance is like for people. But that's, I think, kind of- in the second and the third, there'll be longer.
Longer. They seem a little tough to write, like an action scene. I feel like if you drag it out too long, it loses the like action mm-hmm. quality of it. So I like that you've kind of kept them like very short and to the point. So it's like really like a good showcase of the magic and the power. If it gets too flowery, you know, if Patrick Rothfuss would write an action scene, I don't know how well it would work, you know.
I also looked at like competitions of sword fighting, for example. Mm-hmm. And yeah, those are over in like an instant.
They are very fast.
Yeah, so I was thinking if two masters also like go toe-to-toe, yeah, it's very fast. Because just one slip-up means it's done. I was thinking in that sort of way of like, realistically, it would be very fast. It would be very, yeah, just
yeah, dumb. Wouldn't always play out like that cinema sword fight where it's like 15 minutes of touch and go, you know, perfectly blocked, perfectly parried. And it's like, no, if you're really good at what you're doing, it's over quick.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, there's so much about the world I could start spewing about.
Don't give it all away.
Yeah, we respect the fact that, you know, you want to allow your readers to enjoy it spoiler-free. Without giving too much away, is there any maybe line, passage, or part of your book that you're most proud of?
Yes, I wrote it on the plane. I remember it very vividly. His first introduction to the kind of magic, and his teacher is also one of these Charnin with the horns. So he asks, like, what does the room that we're in sound like? My character is a little bit, how do you say it? Like, oh, it's empty, so it's silent. If you don't mind, I'm going to quickly pull it up.
Yeah, just please.
Oh, yeah, definitely pull it up. I want to hear it word for word.
So he needs to describe what the world or the room sounds like. And he says something like, the room sounds quiet. And then the master in turn says, do not listen to what your eyes have told you to be true. You saw an empty room when you walked in, and so you assumed it to be quiet.
Ooh.
I was on the plane and I just nudged my friend and was like, read this.
Just having a little celebration. That's a great line. I love those lines in fantasy because I think you can get away with having those philosophical statements or, you know, be a little bit more flowery with your language. Like, that's not the way we would speak in our world, but in fantasy, you get those like legendary lines like that. Yeah. And I love those. So that's awesome. That was a great line.
That Cézanne, as I call it, like it's a form of meditation that those people invented, those Tronin. And it's a centerpiece of this magic of you have to feel the forces around you to be able to influence them. And so this is like a centerpiece almost that he always needs to go back to as like, calm yourself and really look at the world around you, how it is and not how you think it to be, with his biases, of course, in the world, and with he can't use those because he convinces himself that something is the way it is and it's not like that and he can't influence it. So it's like he has to really think about it, you know, really see it.
It's like Kvothe going into Heart of Stone.
Yes.
I was reading and I was like, whoa.
This is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love, I think some people maybe find that like silly about fantasy, but I think that kind of stuff is so fun and so cool. I don't know. That line was great. I thought that was awesome. Do you, because I know we talked a lot about like your book being about sort of like discovery of self. Is there something that you want your readers to take away from your book or learn from your book?
That's a tough question because I don't think if you read it that you'll be rooting for the main guy.
Oh.
At least not in this. Like, he does some stuff that I think are like, you almost feel like you're reading a villain story at some points. But then I try to pull him back again. So I think like redemption, like redemption wise, I think it's like, yeah, because I don't want to say you can do bad things and it'll be fine. Yeah, like, I don't want to say that. It's like you're not who your actions like influence people and you have to like atone for it. And like there's a lot to be said about morality and how it affects the world around him and how it affects himself. I have like a whole chapter about where he just reflects on himself for like 3 pages.
That sounds like really thought-provoking, though, to make people kind of look introspectively and, you know, if he is getting away with doing bad things, like, why? And then how has that changed him as a character? And, like, what in the world is allowing him to get away with doing bad? Like, and how can you you come back from that as a person or a character.
Right. So. Like, how do you overcome your flaws? And I think that's, regardless of action, something everyone can take away from.
Yeah. It sounds like because you did put a lot less of the politics, but more of like the personal in there, I'm sure there's like a lot to think about on with all the different characters. And I bet readers are going to get a lot of different things out of your book. It sounds like. Plus a fun adventure.
I almost feel uncomfortable with saying, like, this is the message of the book. Because it's actually rather a sad tragedy kind of... it's, like, very... I think you can get a lot of things out of it, but also a lot of things like, I don't think that's what to do. Yeah, it's more like what not to do at some points, indeed.
No, that's awesome. I think, again, it's... sometimes important to see the fall of a quote-unquote hero or like that delve into darkness and hopefully try to redeem oneself, because if a character doesn't make any mistakes, that doesn't make them compelling. That makes them perfect, and nobody's perfect. So,
yeah, it's a lot more easy to relate to a character that does have flaws, I think.
Yeah, for example, in this chapter, he literally says to himself, like, why is it that we do the things we do? It's like, that's what I want to capture in him. It's like, why do I do these things? Why am I so compelled to do what is good for me, but not good for others? Or like, not even good for himself, but just what happens when he lets go?
He sounds like a really interesting character, though.
Yeah.
I think, like Sam was saying, if your main hero is just good all the time and never has any doubts or confusion or, you know, is always altruistic, then... that's not realistic, and they fall flat. So if you have a character who literally is saying, why do we do the things that we do? I think we've all been there, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of, you can definitely relate to someone like that.
Like the mentor is like hanging over, like looming over him. And he like, he knows what he's supposed to do, but he just can't get himself to do it. And so he's like struggling with this internal feeling of, I know like that this is not good.
But so. I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry, Master.
How old is your main character?
At the beginning of the story, he's 16. But
classic
there's,
coming of age.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a time jump I use because at the end I want him to be... yeah, in the story to come, I want him to be much older. But I needed to tell it from when he was like 16-ish. I was thinking first younger, but... yeah, you'll see some scenes turn a little weird if he's 12.
So. Can't entertain any romance being that young.
Yeah, that's something weird if he's like 12-year-old boy just running around.
No, 16 is always the fantasy age. They're always turning 16, so that makes perfect sense. Now that you've done your first book, and I know you're working on your second, are there lessons that you learned from writing one whole complete project that you're going to take into your future writing projects?
What did I learn? Because I steamrolled into the second one, so it's, I have to now reflect on it. I did it kind of opposite of how I've read people do it. For example, now with Neverwinter, I think it's the best example I can give is that the first one is really set up. Like, there's a lot of lore, there's a lot of why, like, why does the story happen? There's a lot of world building. And I think with me, the second one will actually be more lore and the world around them. And because this is actually like him, like his head. And then the second one is more around him.
More. I think Mistborn went that way, right? I think the first Mistborn story.
I think
you'll like it. The first Mistborn story is like a small group of characters. Mm-hmm. And you kind of follow. There's the perspective is from two different characters, and one has a lot of self-doubt, and then book two is a lot more like politics and world building, and they go a lot more places and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, and because I think in the second one I've already introduced more characters than in the first one at chapter 6, so I think
nice, the world's exploding.
How do you keep track of all those characters?
I have a little file with their names and like the general thing that they are. I try to evolve them together with, so I don't want to get stuck up on this concept I have for them. And what I learned, I think, it just popped into my head, is to write that people understand what I'm trying to write. Like, especially with the science sort of stuff, I had to like take snippets and send it to people and like, what do you think this does? And when I say like, he was magnetizing something, for example, and like, I describe how he pushes like the atoms into one direction so they all flow and create a magnetic field around the object. I was always trying to see, do people understand what I'm trying to say here? So I think that's the most thing, what I most improved upon when it comes to the second book.
That's awesome. I think with fantasy too, that's so important because it's easy to like have these like grand, this is like from my perspective as I'm trying to write my own book. Sometimes I have this idea in my head and I try to describe it, this big grand thing. And, you know, with magic systems in my head, it makes sense. But I need to be super clear on the page. Mm-hmm. Like, now is not the time to have flowery language. Like, just very clearly say, this is, like, what is happening.
Exactly. Like a rule book. Like,
yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Step one, ground yourself.
Step two, magnetize.
Exactly.
Step three, do the thing.
Step four, profit.
Oh, that's awesome. This isn't a question about writing, but your book, I know you mentioned earlier, has a red cover. Did you have a cover in mind for your book? Did you have a friend do the art for your book? How did you come about the artwork for it?
Yeah, when I wrote the fifth chapter, I think, I had the idea and I've stuck with it ever since, except for the color. So there's a character on the front page. It's a bear. Very central to his story. And I wanted it to be that bear. The color was originally purple because I wanted to do something else with it. But now I chose in red because the colors red, purple, and blue are also very present. It shows him, it almost shows his morality. It's like a reflection of what has happening around him. It tends to have the color of what he's about to do almost. And red is violent, it's very... that's his state where he's like, I'm gonna kill them. And for the art, my girlfriend actually made the cover. She's a wonderful artist, the best I know. So free advertisement for her. I think I really love the cover. I hadn't envisioned it that good. I had like made a sketch of it and she was like, no. And I let her have the freedom. She just said what needs to be in it, I'll do it. And I wanted to hide some details in it as well, so when you read the book you can look back and see something.
I love that.
Again, little Easter eggs.
Yeah, I like how much you've like secretly like peppered in terms of like the colors doing representation of sort of morality, and then you know, the callback chapter you added. I think it seems like, as fellow Name of the Wind lovers, like, I love those little pieces. So it seems awesome that you took those from stuff that you like and, you know, worked that all into your book too.
Yeah. And so, yeah, because I really, those puzzle pieces, they are going around in my head right now. So like, I'm trying to think what did I actually, because I need to watch out for it as well, because I don't want to overdo it. And I don't want to like, also not introduce something here that I'm never going to deliver on. So,
right. Yeah. That's smart to keep track of all of that.
Yeah.
I think that makes a really cohesive story. I'm excited to definitely check your book out. Is it going to be easily available online?
Yeah, the publisher that I'm working with is rather local, but they agreed because I'm reaching out to like you, for example, and I've also reached out to a YouTube channel, that they agreed upon letting it also be on Amazon, I think. It was supposed to be only like on a local website. And they said like, come, let's take the chance.
That's because awesome. I could
prove that I'm trying to reach out to a wider audience.
Yeah, well, I'm super excited to get a copy and dig into it. I'm really interested in the way the magic system works. I'm really intrigued by the way you've described that. And all the races of your characters, I really think is going to be a fascinating story, so I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, just really happy we got a chance to do this. I'm excited that you got to share your characters and your world with us, Tom, and I just had a lot of fun just talking with you today.
Yeah, me as well. And thank you again for having me. It was really cool to just talk about it, actually. It was a first time as well. It's really nice to just get it all out.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, you worked on something for so long, so I'm sure it's awesome to be able to like finally have it all complete.
Definitely.
You know, just one book of your many that are going to be coming. But yeah, it's cool to share. So I love hearing about it. We love books, obviously. So nice to talk to fellow book nerds and fantasy nerds and everything.
I'll definitely be back for the second one if that's
yeah, definitely. Definitely. Do you want to just mention to all our listeners where they can find you on your like social media and everything so they can follow along with your book?
Yeah, progress? I'm not much of a social media guy, but I did make a Instagram. I posted some of the art I've tried to make. Don't compare it to my girlfriend's art, please. and now I've transformed it more into like my author profile, I'll say. And of course, yeah, so my name, Tom Waters, tom.waters.author is so what I'm called on Instagram. And I'll post some links. There's also my Wix website
awesome. On there. We'll put the links in the episode description too, so people can follow those and find you and find your book and everything.
Yeah, perfect. I think, and I'm always, I always love hearing about like people that are trying to like make art or something, or want to maybe beta read some snippets of it. That because I really want to broad audience on what I said, like the sciencey stuff of it, that it's like everyone understands. So I'm always looking for a set of eyes. So if anyone ever wants to reach out, you can definitely do that on my Instagram.
Very cool.
Thanks, listeners. If you're looking for more, check us out at fantasticbookspod.com, where we have book reviews, reading list suggestions, merch, and you can even send us a message.
Or find us on Facebook and Instagram at Fantastic Books Pod.
And if you like what you've been hearing, don't forget to leave us a review.
Thanks. Thanks.
Golden Rise Media.